Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hello, and welcome back to the Equipped Man Podcast, a podcast where we explore what it means to be a man of God in the 21st century. I'm your host, Luke Wance. And today I'm joined with another friend of mine, Sean Jonas. He is pastor. He's been a musician and dad, a husband. He's been a little bit of everything. So, Sean, welcome to the studio.
That's good to finally be on here.
Yes.
A week late.
Only a week late. It's okay. It's okay. Nobody knows the schedule. It's not like I announced it. That was funny, though. You're like, hey, when was that supposed to be? 2 days ago? Oh.
Oh, man, you talking about, man, I was like, oh, man, I went from hero to zero.
That's okay. We still love you. So how you been? You good?
Yeah, good.
Yeah?
Busy.
That's good busy?
Good busy.
Good busy?
Yeah. Good busy. Yeah. You know, kids just started school again.
Yes.
And in 2 weeks, I'm going on tour.
That's awesome. That's exciting.
And so, and then on top of that, there's this band out of England. They're called Barriers.
Okay.
And I have a vocal track that I have to lay on for that.
So, oh, very cool.
And then all the work from the church. So it's just been crazy.
That's awesome. So I'm gonna kind of come out of the gate hard.
Okay.
So what does it mean to you to be a man of God?
Well, you know, with what we're kind of battling in our current culture with the toxic masculinity. See, I grew up in West Virginia. You know, I grew up in the woods.
Yeah.
You know, we built cabins. You know, my friend Heath Greathouse and I caught the woods on fire. We got our tails whipped on that one. But, you know, to be a man, I just think, one, for me personally, I'm a believer. So to be a man of God is one that is close to God.
Yeah.
And out of that, integrity, character, all those things are developed. And that's where I stay kind of centered in that. But, you know, in their culture, it's so, you know, I do not hold back. Like, I remember I said something to some friends on a Facebook Live. And like, dude, you can't say that. I was like, who says I can't say that? You know, I was like, I just grew up, you know, you say what you mean.
Yeah.
And mean what you say.
Yeah.
And, you know, I grew up, my dad was a, you know, blue collar as they come, you know, and not a hugger, not all that, you know, very masculine man, worked in the oil field from the time he was 14 until he was like 68.
Oh, wow.
And so my buddies would see him in the pipe yard.
Yeah.
And he'd be lifting like 3-inch thick pipe and just throwing it with one arm into the back of the truck.
Holy cow.
And he's not much taller than me, you know? So, but, you know, I just grew up with strong men. You know, some good characteristics.
Yeah.
They weren't big huggers and I love you and those things. So, you know, carrying that over into, you know, fatherhood. You know, I wanted to fix the wrongs, but still be a manly man, still be a man of integrity and character and honor, and one that would, you know, step it up for his buddies, for his friends, for his family, and always being present. I think that's super important in our culture, is that a man is present for his family and for his friends.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely agree. And you definitely have your hands full with that, because you have four.
Yeah.
You have four kids.
Four, yeah. And two girls, two boys.
Yeah.
And I'm booked in. You know, my first daughter, you know, they always tell you that, you know, you're going to have the terrible twos.
Yeah.
Ella had the terrible twos, threes, fours, fives, sixes. I think it wasn't until seven or eight that she started to break a little bit. But now it's like my Ian, my youngest boy.
Yeah.
Man, he's not much different than Ella. He's pretty wild.
That's awesome.
But my other two in the middle, they're pretty mellow.
I was gonna say it is. Your kids are almost like night and day. It's like the wild, the crazy, and then all of a sudden it's like the quiet and reserved. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah. But you know, it's cool. Like I heard somebody one time, I think a guy by the name of Tommy Zito, he's a evangelist type guy, and he was having his like third kid or something, and he had something, you know, he's really afraid, like going into the second kid, he's like, can I love this kid as much as I love, because I really love this, the first kid we have. And it's so unique what God does in your heart, like when you have multiple kids, like you just, they're different, their personalities are different, and you just learn their love language almost, and you just kind of learn how to father and navigate kind of through that with them, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. To throw another curveball in there, it's also fun when one of them isn't naturally yours.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
See, I was married before.
Okay.
And for 5 years, and my first wife had two kids of her own.
Okay.
She had them at a very young age. She was 15 and 16 when she had these kids.
Okay.
And so they came out of a pretty rough upbringing because they were living with their dad, and then we got them. And so for 5 years, I was stepdad.
Oh, yeah.
To two kids that were not, she was black, I was white, so I had two black stepkids. And it was always interesting when I'd go to Walmart and my stepson Jabari would yell, "Dad!" across the store and see a bunch of heads look at this super white guy. Like,
that's awesome.
I am pale.
Yes.
You know, and they're like, okay. It's like on, you remember the Sesame Street, which one of these things?
Yeah.
But I loved those kids. Like, they were my own.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's awesome.
But that's how West Virginians were raised, man.
Yeah.
We love, we forgive, we forget, we move on. We're just regular folk, you know?
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love it. Now, were you raised like Christian?
Because
you said you were raised blue collar working family.
No, I was blue collar working family. No Christian heritage at all. Like no reference. The only thing I could ever think of was my grandma Har, which was my mom's mom, had a Bible on her nightstand, and that was it. That was. So I grew up, I think I went to a Methodist church service when I was in Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts.
Okay.
And it was at some event that we were doing. And so they made us go to church on that Sunday morning. And I remember just, I couldn't follow the hymnals, the up and down and all around. Like, I was like, man, I can't get on board with this. This is boring. You know? So to me, Christianity was boring. I didn't understand it. I didn't know who Jesus was.
Yeah.
I remember getting in an argument with a girl that had a pencil. She was a Methodist pastor's daughter, and she had a pencil that said, "Jesus Christ is Lord." And I said, "Jesus Christ is Lord." I was like, wait, God is Lord. Like, I didn't know who Jesus was.
Yeah.
And so I had no reference.
Okay.
Until I was born again at 18. And, you know, I told you before we even got started, like, I think it was summer, late summer of 94. I got busted for breaking into cars, and you know, I'm in a police station in Marietta, Ohio. My dad's sitting across the table from me.
Yeah.
He says, "Son, I raised you better than this." That's all he knew. He's like, "Just be good."
Yeah.
You know, so, but those words sent me on a new path. Like, I knew I had bad influences in my life. I knew I had to dump some friends. They let me take the fall for something they did.
Oh, wow.
And so I had to pay the fines, and a cop stood at the courthouse as I'm leaving, and he says, "I wish it was 6 months later, because I would have been 18.
Oh, wow.
Because he wanted to bust me good. Like, he wanted me to go to jail. Because and I said, "Sir, I did not do this."
Yeah.
But so I'm going through that, but that just sent me on a path to, like, really trying to discover some change in my life.
Yeah.
I didn't know where it was going to come from till I ran into a girl that had a shirt on that I like was intrigued by. It said, "Abortion kills a beating heart." And I wasn't pro-life or pro-choice, wasn't pro anything, but I had a girlfriend that had an abortion.
Okay.
And when I was in 11th grade. So when I seen that shirt, I was like, something spoke to me out of it.
Yeah.
And so I was drawn to her. And the next day, I'm at her church, you know? And wow. I'm like, this is wild, you know? Yeah. They're lifting their hands and whole thing. And a week later, I'm born again.
Wow. That's crazy how that happens.
Yeah.
It is. It's because I've had a couple of those moments myself where it's like before I was Christian, it's like, you know, it's like you look back now that you're Christian, it's like, okay, those were the moments where God, you know, tried to intervene on my part. If only I would have listened, but I listened here and that's what helped move me. So you went from just living for yourself and doing whatever you want to.
I mean, I remember the day before I got born again, my two friends picked me up in their Toyota Tundra and they had two bottles of whiskey and we were going to go. We always went out to our friend's property. It was just a bunch of big open field and we'd build a bonfire. We'd just get ripped up and head home drunk as skunks. And I would just walk straight to my room, talk to my mom. Cause I was like, if she sees me, I'm busted. And you know, just living this life. I remember being so high one time that I was asking my other high friend, it was in the passenger seat, am I in the lane?
Oh, wow.
Cause we're driving up a 2-lane, pretty busy road. It was near the community college. And he's like, yeah, you're in the lane. I mean, that's how bad it had gotten.
Wow.
And I just remember I was in that church service. It was a strip mall church in Athens, Ohio. And it was called the Celebration Center. And this drama team was doing a bunch of skits.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really heart-wrenching, you know, just, you know, about your life and do you know Jesus and those things. And I just remember being so convicted, but so clear. Like, I was like, that's what it is. That's what I need. I need Jesus in my heart. I need him in my life. And I remember I went to that altar, gave my life to the Lord. And what was crazy was it was like, you know how they say the old is past, the new has come. Like the new immediately came.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And it's like, I had no desire for alcohol.
Yeah.
No, not because anybody was telling me, okay, now you don't need to drink. You don't need to. It was almost like I just knew.
Yeah.
It was like new revelation, but I consumed the New Testament in like a weekend.
Oh, wow.
My friend was like, he goes, yeah, just read the New Testament. I was like, what is that? He's like, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So I read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. He's like, man, I was just talking about one of them. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, they were good.
Yeah. Why does this story seem like it's repeating? What's going on here?
Man, I was on fire, and I was one of those cornball Christians.
Oh, okay.
Had to have the bumper stickers, had to have the t-shirt. I went through all that. You know, I wasn't quite as bad as the Reese's Cup Jesus t-shirt.
Okay.
I always thought that was corny, but
yeah.
But yeah. And then 6 months later, I'm touring in a Christian band.
Wow.
It was wild.
So were you... like, were you into music beforehand, or how did that happen?
I grew up with square dancing parents, and you know when you're young and your parents are into something, you want to just revolt against it.
Oh yeah.
So I remember sitting in my living room because my babysitter for my two older sisters, my babysitter was MTV.
Okay.
So I grew up, and I remember the day like. I mean, I just remember the way the sun was coming in the windows and everything. The music video for Metallica 1 came on.
Oh, great video.
Oh, my
great
gosh.
Video,
I was
song.
Like, I jumped on my little BMX bike and I rode to Kmart to get me that And Justice for All album.
Yeah.
And that began the journey. My first concert that I ever witnessed was Anthrax and Iron Maiden in the Charleston Civic Center. My sister she helped me, you know, dive. So I was a big metalhead.
Okay.
But then I got into Nirvana and grunge, and I went through some punk rock phase. But by the time I got born again, it was so God. It was so cool that I ended up in the youth group that I ended up in, because all these guys were into metal and punk rock and all that.
Yeah.
The guy that prayed for me, his name was Eric Reeder. He had blue hair.
Nice.
You know, when he prayed for my salvation. You know, and I'm like, oh man, I can get on board with these people, you know?
Oh, definitely.
And they were all in a band called Zayo.
Okay, wow.
And And so they're like, hey, you got to come see us, our shows. And I remember coming there and it was intense. And it wasn't just Christian bands. It was Christian and non-Christian. It's kind of how the scene was back then. You know,
yeah.
Everybody played with everybody. And then, but they were so bold with in their faith. And I just remember like I was born again for like 3 or 4 months. And I said, hey, we want to start this new band called Monroe. You could scream in it. And they didn't know if I could scream or not. and Mick.
You can learn. You'll learn.
And so what it was basically just like Zayo, but like the Zayo drummer became the guitar player. The guitar player became the drummer. And then the bass player stayed on bass, but then he sang some lines. And then I would scream some lines.
Wow.
And that's where it started with this band Monroe. And then 2 months later, or three months later, after they got back from tour, the lead singer felt this call to ministry and go to ministry school. So the door opened wide open for me to take the lead vocal role in Zayo.
Yeah.
And they were just signed a record deal.
Wow.
So I had to get ready. I had to, one, learn all the songs.
Yeah.
But very short period of time, I had to learn how to record.
Okay.
And I'd never been in a studio thus far, you know?
Yeah.
So it was intense and it was a whirlwind, but man, it was awesome.
That's cool.
It was a life changer.
Yeah.
By the time I remember getting back out of the summer, going into my like senior year, and they're like, hey, what'd you do this summer? And I was like, I've seen 43 of the 50 states, you know, because we...
I don't know. It's all a blur.
We toured, like, nonstop all summer long. And
wow.
By the time I was going to my 11th or my 12th grade year, I was like, they were like, what? You did what?
That's awesome. And I know you've been in a couple few bands.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I don't remember which band you were with, but I remember, because I want to highlight kind of your boldness of while you were doing this.
Yeah.
Because I remember you telling a story how some of your bandmates tried to restrain you.
Yeah.
Vocally, at least, as far as speaking out for Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, what?
I was very on fire for God. Like, and before the shows would even start, I would go and I'd walk off. And I'd find, like, if we were at a Knights of Columbus or if we were at some venue, I'd find an abandoned room, like a room that I could just be alone in.
Okay.
And I'd read my Bible, but I'd get alone. I'd get in the presence of God.
Yeah.
Because when I stepped up on that platform, I just made a promise to God when I started music. I said, God, I will not speak for you. I will not take this opportunity with all these hundreds of kids in front of me and not acknowledge that Jesus is Lord, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was bold and I was so radically saved, you know, and it was so real to me that I couldn't not say something.
Yeah.
So I was extremely bold and was known around the scene for being bold. And so we got to, I think it was California. We were performing in a venue that was on California University's campus.
Okay.
Or the University of California. I can't remember how it is. But it was a big venue. It was a big show. It was a bunch of bands that we were familiar with from Arizona and some other places that we were performing with. One band was called Overcome. And so it was packed out. It was a great show. Big
nice.
Show.
Yeah.
And the promoter comes up to us and says, hey, there's this group of guys, they're called Courage Crew. They were straight edge hardcore kids that didn't drink, didn't smoke, didn't have premarital sex, like all these things. They were just pure and they wear these big X's on their hands.
Yeah.
But they were also very violent towards people that did drink believed in Jesus. They hated Jesus. And so there'd been rumors that these guys had been carving X's into people's backs with razor blades at shows.
Wow.
So they were extremely violent.
Yeah.
And so the promoter says, Courage Crew is here. I know you're a Christian band. And he was like, I hate to ask this of you guys, but don't say anything about Jesus.
Yeah.
It's not going to be pretty.
Yeah.
For you and maybe for people in the crowd.
Wow.
And so, you know, so we had a little band huddle and they're like, Sean, whatever you do, dude,
we want to, like, walk out of this place.
Do not say anything.
Yeah.
And so I was like, whatever. And I just got up there and we were in like third or fourth song. They were tuning their instruments between songs and I got up there. And I don't remember what I said, something along the lines of like, hey, we all go through things in life and we all battle stuff. And people are like, yeah. And I was like, but I want to tell you, there's only one answer to overcome all those obstacles in life. And that is Jesus Christ. And the crowd roared.
Yeah.
But then you heard some other thing like, shut up and play. Yeah. Stuff. But they didn't just say shut up. They said, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just remember that promoter gave us our like check and was like, get out of here.
Wow.
And like, I think we had to like get out of there quickly because I think they were going to come for us.
Yeah.
It was intense, but we faced that everywhere we went. Had beer bottles thrown past our heads, you know.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff. But we were real groundbreakers because hardcore was a new genre at the time. It was very new. We were in a scene that wasn't welcoming to Christianity.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about hardcore was it was about whatever you were believing, whatever you stood for, you were hardcore. Like, you weren't coming off of it. Like, so...
Yeah.
We were one of those bands that were truly hardcore. Like, we were hardcore for Christ.
Yeah.
And these other bands were hardcore for straight edge or hardcore for Krishna or whatever they wanted to be, you know. But that was what was great about the scene. And it was a very accepting scene to a point, you know. But you'd have those violent cities, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I know up in the Boston area and stuff, they didn't play around, man. They'd beat you up.
Oh, wow.
It was violent.
Wow.
And so, you know, you just kind of rolled with it, but I didn't, I wasn't going to say, you know, I don't have a religion. I have a relationship with God.
Yeah.
He's transformed my life. He could transform your life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so
yeah, definitely.
Go for it.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I remember that was the big thing that, you know, for me, it wasn't even so much the relationship or anybody like trying to preach to me or anything. It was just, I got to know my neighbors and, you know, I in a way built a relationship with them and it kind of hit me one day. I was like, you know, if they're really cool people and if that's what happens by going to their church, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
You know, what's the worst that happens?
Yep. And you know, I don't know if I always heard Leonard Ravenhill say this as an old school preacher.
Yeah.
But he used to say, preach the gospel. If necessary, use words.
Nice.
And that profoundly spoke to me because I'm like, our life should be the gospel. Like, agreed. Your neighbors.
Agreed.
Their life was the gospel. Yeah. They were nice. They were kind. They were pleasant. They were giving. They were caring. You know, those things. And that's what, but that's what's missing in our culture because we have a lot of talk, but little action.
I agree. Cause my neighbor, I mean, I found out later, you know, he had been going to church most of his life. He was occasionally on the worship team, you know, did ministry and everything. And it was like, he never mentioned, you know, here's what the Bible says. Here's what Jesus says. You know, he would never even bring up Jesus, God, the Bible, anything unless I did first, you know? So it was like really cool. And that was one thing I appreciated about him. Even though I knew he was Christian and going to church, but you know, he was really cool about it. So
What's crazy is one of the darkest places spiritually I'd ever been in performing in my band.
Yeah.
Was actually a church.
Wow.
I remember being in a basement of a church in Marietta, Ohio, and I've never felt more demonic activity than in that place. And that will put that in your theology pipe and smoke it. You know, it's
no
like
doubt.
A lot of people are like, oh, that's not possible. No, we were like, there is an oppressive demonic thing in this atmosphere.
And yeah.
So, yeah, like, I'm just anti-religion.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I want to sit there and say, oh, no way. But then it's like, well, no, I totally agree with that. Because, again, I've heard it said before, and I 100% agree with this. God, the, you know, the devil, the enemy, Satan, whatever you want to call him, he's not in the bars. He's not in the clubs trying to get people, convincing them that they need to change their way of life. You know, he's got them.
Yep.
He's in the church pews questioning, you know, again, kind of like, you know, the, you know, he did it to Jesus, you know.
Yeah.
Is this really what God said? He did it with Adam and Eve. Is this what God said?
Yeah.
You know, why isn't he going to do that to us?
Yeah.
In the church pews. In the middle of the sermon.
he doesn't go for the weak.
No.
He goes for the strong, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I love the scripture. I think it's Proverbs 4:24, I do believe. It's guard your heart. Above all else, guard your heart, for out of it will flow the issues of life.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, we have to continuously, as men, be on guard. You know, I battled for many years, even into my Christian years, battled tremendously with lust.
Yeah.
Tremendously. It was more than a mountain to, I mean, it was huge. I had to knock that thing down.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was to the point where I would be driving home and I'd be running over in my mind, what do I want to look at tonight? What do I want? I want this type of porn, this type of, I mean, it was bad. Like it had me wrapped up.
Wow.
And I remember, cause I got so, like, I got my divorce from my first wife, and I started hanging out with a group of guys, and I started doing some little bit of social drinking. I had a fall. Like, it was a very short season of time. I had a fall in my walk with God because I wasn't guarding my heart. But I was mostly mad at the church, and I let it, like, overwhelm me.
Okay.
To the point to where I was just like, I'm done with religion. I love Jesus.
Yeah.
I love God. I never let go of God. I was like, God, I'm here for you. I just don't want them.
Right, you know,
I just don't want organized religion anymore. My lyrics reflected it because I was in my second band by then.
Okay.
My lyrics were highly reflecting that, where I had a song called Revolving Door Romance.
Oh,
and it was about how slick hair, shiny shoed people, or preachers are bringing them in, but it's like a revolving door romance. They're coming in one door, and then a group of them are going right out the other door, you know. And I said,
wow.
Like, it had some.
I could see that, yeah.
But it was, I was in a very bitter place, and you know, you said it got like Satan's not in the bars.
Yeah,
I was in a bar, and I'm looking across the bar, and there was a married couple, probably my age now, and the Lord spoke to me and said, "Do you want to be them?"
Ooh.
In a place like this when you're their age.
Yeah.
And it was like, and I went immediately to my friend. I was like, the Lord spoke to me. I got to get out of here. He's like, what have you been smoking? What did somebody give you? You know, it's like, God doesn't speak to people in places like this. I was like, yeah, he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was it, you know, but that was a very short period of time. Cause I was still love Jesus, man. I just didn't want religion.
Yeah.
Because I was so into, like, being intimate with the Lord.
Yeah.
Close to him.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, that is profound. And I do. I believe that, you know, yes, as much as Satan isn't in the bars, you know, I know God can speak to people anywhere.
Yeah.
You know. So to kind of fast forward or however you want to jump ahead, because in my mind, this is kind of an interesting twist, because you went from the hardcore scene to screaming, you know, at basically screaming at fans every night or every other night, traveling the country.
Yeah.
To all of a sudden later in your life or years, I don't know your timeline. But all of a sudden you're a youth minister.
Yeah.
So it's like
what was crazy was, you know, I was coming to the end of Symphony in Peril, which was my second band.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rededicated my life to the Lord. It was during all that process, rededicated my life to the Lord. Had a, like, that shortly after that weekend where the Lord spoke to me in the bar, my good friend is Pastor Lonnie Coates. His daughter was the one that had the abortion because of beating heart.
Okay.
So I was really close to this guy, and he randomly calls my phone, leaves a voicemail message. I didn't get it.
Yeah.
And he says, Sean, what are you doing? The Lord brought you up in my spirit. You need to get down to my church on Sunday morning. It was in Athens, Ohio.
Okay.
And I was living in Columbus, Ohio at the time. And I was just like, I don't care what it takes. I'm going to be down there.
Nice.
And I remember the song that was playing when I rededicated my life, really fully engaged back to the Lord. It was the song, Our God Reigns Forever, His Kingdom Reigns.
Mm,
and
yeah.
I buried my face into a dirty old church pew. And I weeped and I cried and I apologized to the Lord. Everything you do when you're just repenting and turning
yeah.
it. And that was, it was so funny because 3 months later, I'm still not feeling like I'm 100% like back to where I should be to get back into youth, into ministry and stuff. Cause I graduated Bible college and I did ministry for a little while before I did Symphony of Peril and had kind of just had a terrible experience with it.
Gotcha.
Just didn't get around the right people and stuff and got around a lot of religion.
Gotcha.
And so, but this time around, like I'm that night that I gave my life to the Lord, I also met Joy.
Okay.
And ran into her, and you know, a year or so later, I'm married, remarried,
yeah,
and I am getting ready to have my baby girl,
yeah,
my first child, and I'm calling my buddy that I went to Bible college, we roommate, and just telling him about all the good things that God is doing in my life, and he said, oh, that's awesome. I have kids of my own. We start talking about parenting and stuff. And I'm nervous as a cat, you know. I'm like, I'm going to be a terrible dad, you know. And he calls me back and says, man, there might be an opportunity for you. Would you ever want to do youth ministry?
Holy cow.
And I'm thinking, me? Like, are you sure about this, man?
Did you not hear my story?
And, you know, I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I think I'm ready. And I'd been volunteering in a youth ministry at the time, so it wasn't like I wasn't doing some form of ministry.
Yeah.
And so, around the time that I became youth pastor in Huntington, West Virginia, at New Life Church, my daughter was only 3 months old.
Wow.
Yeah, and started the journey. And I was youth pastor there for 10 years.
Yeah.
And we started with around 45 students at the height of our ministry. About I had 150 students.
That's awesome.
For 8 years of the 10 years, my wife and I we started our own youth camp, and it started with 120 students, and it grew to over 600.
Oh, that's
and
awesome!
So we had 600 students and 150 leaders.
Wow,
that we were responsible for our youth camps, and so that was definitely the highlight of our ministry, and we had a ball. Like we have no sad stories, no controversies. You know, we loved youth. We loved youth ministry. We poured our whole lives into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I know there was a bit of a shift and God kind of tapped you and said, hey, let's change seasons.
Yeah. Yeah. We had been feeling probably the last 2 years of youth ministry, something was weird. It's when God does that, it's not like it's gentle and you start feeling uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And what was originally feeling natural was feeling uncomfortable. Like I remember going in my final year of youth ministry, and every late summer after youth camp and everything, we would do camp planning meetings, and we would plan out most of our year in a 2 week time frame. We'd just like schedule out like what events we wanted to do, what activities we wanted to do, what kind of message series we wanted to do, what did we want to tackle. And I went into it very robotic, like just checking off all the boxes things that we had done before. And, you know, I was just so used to like knowing the game, you know, and I remember handing it off to my associate pastor, which was my roommate from Bible college. And Josh was like, we had a meeting after just to go over the plan. And he's like, man, like, something's different, man. Like, I don't see the fire in this plan, you know?
Yeah.
Because he would, like, other years I had a lot of creative ideas, a lot of things. But this was just regurgitating, like.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So my wife started feeling it way before I was.
Okay.
She was kind of ready to just
bless,
kinda,
bless wives. They're good.
I know, man. God speaks to them way before. My wife is my second Holy Spirit, because when I ain't listening to the Holy Spirit, she is, and she's going to let me know.
Oh, yeah.
But she was feeling it way before I was. But I remember we had this service, and God moved, and bunch of like seven kids were filled with the Spirit, and we just had an unbelievable time in worship. And I just remember I got back home and I was laying in bed and I was going over the night in my head, and I just was just really staying really sensitive to the Lord, and he just said, it's time. And I turned to my wife and I said, it's time. And she says, time for what? It's like, I think I'm gonna go to pastor. Tell him, I think it's time. And and that was the journey. And so I was like in a no plans place, like no plans.
Yeah.
Like I was done with, I was like, I'm ready to step out of ministry. Had no job, had like no plans, no idea of what to do next.
Yeah.
Was totally walking with God with it.
Yeah.
Kind of wanted to maybe pastor, but I had nothing. Like, and so I talked to some friends, got a little graphic design gig at a print company, and was still finishing up my role as youth pastor.
Yeah.
And my friend Homer Chapman comes up, and he goes, "Hey, Dustin Smith," which was the worship leader, my current church it used to be called World Revival Church.
Yeah.
And then he went off and was doing his own thing. He was traveling, but he also led worship at my youth camps.
Yeah. Okay.
He was hosting a big men's retreat.
That was a great weekend.
It was a fantastic weekend.
I went to that as well. That was a fun
and
weekend.
So my friend Homer, I remember seeing Dustin posting, and he's like, limited number of people can go.
Yeah.
Well, my friend Homer Chapman was thinking of me, and he knew my transition. He knew everything was going. He bought me a ticket without me even telling him to. And he's like, dude, you're gone.
That's awesome.
And I really wanted to go, but I didn't really have the money, because I was saving pennies, because I was like, I wasn't going to make as much as I was making in being youth pastor, you know? And so he's like, man, I'm paying for you to go. And I went to Joy and I said, hey, are you cool with me going to this?
She's
like, yeah, I think that'd be good. And that weekend was God. It was a God weekend.
Yeah, well,
because one, the weekend was just unbelievable. I'd never been around guys that were going after the presence of God like that. Men like normally are pretty restrained and less bold, but man, that weekend they were singing with boldness and crying out to God. And I just remember Pastor Steve Gray walked in the side, and I was like, whoa, that's Pastor Steve Gray. I didn't know he was going to be here. And I remember years prior, I'd watched him on TV on Daystar during the revival days.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I want to talk to him after service. Well, during the service, Dustin honors me in front of everybody, tells them my story about the youth, being a youth pastor. He said, hey, this is one of the best youth pastors I've ever been in contact with.
Yeah.
He's stepping out of youth ministry and he's stepping into this new phase of ministry. And what was crazy is, prior to that weekend, James Copang sent me a text, and he said, hey, I heard you're going down there, and da-da-da-da. We were just shooting the breeze, he responded off of seeing that I was stepping out of youth ministry.
Okay.
And I randomly just jokingly said, hey, you know, if you have any openings at World Revival Church, you know, I wouldn't mind, you know.
Yeah.
And he hadn't read it, but he read it on the plane flight down. And Pastor Steve says, who is that?
Yeah.
And he explains him to me. So he already, Pastor Steve already kind of knew kind of about me. Yeah. But then Dustin raves about me, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so by that point, Pastor Steve's like, I got to get to know this guy.
Yeah.
And within a 10-minute conversation, like, I went to get a bottle of water, and he's calling for me to come and talk to him. And he's like one of those guys that doesn't waste time.
No, he doesn't.
Ever.
No, he doesn't. No.
He goes, I'll call my secretary. Can you fly out this weekend? I was like, this weekend? I was like, how about next week?
Right, right.
And he's like, oh, yeah, that would work better. He was wasting no time. Because he really felt like I was a guy that would really make a difference at the church in my talents and abilities and stuff. So that's where it started, man.
Yeah.
It was wild.
Yeah, because I remember, because I saw you there. And I know our wives had made a connection.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we got to know each other.
We actually had a lunch together.
We did at Olive Garden.
At Olive Garden at a women's conference where I literally was the only guy at the women's conference.
Were. Yes, you were. Wow. What lady brings her husband to these things?
Yeah. So I knew of you or briefly.
Yeah.
But it was, oh, man, that weekend. We need to have another one of those.
We do.
We need to do our own here or something.
We do. We
man.
Need to figure out how to make that happen.
That was so fun.
You know, maybe with this, I can start like a men's ministry, and instead of like be fierce, be the equipped man.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah, something. That'd be great.
Yeah. In a way, that's kind of my hope. I mean, and not that I sat there and said, I wanna start a men's ministry.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, this started with looking for a men's ministry.
Yeah.
You know, because again, I've said this before here on the podcast. I told you earlier, you know, it's all about that. Okay, I'm a Christian. Now what?
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of pressure, you know, in the world, and especially in that we as men put on ourselves as husbands, fathers, you know, even just as men,
mm-hmm.
you know, as Christian men, there's all this pressure, and it's like, how do I do this? How do I live this life?
Yeah.
How do I walk this out? You know, I know some in some ways, I've kind of been walking through some mental health questions and stuff on my own. Not totally on my own. I'm getting some help. you know, but it was one of those things that, you know, whenever something happens, it's like, well, you just, you shove it down,
mm-hmm.
and because you don't want to look weak, you don't want to look, you know, exposed, you don't want to look vulnerable, even though you know that your wife,
we're
your kids
terrible
are,
at that.
Oh yeah, we are, you know, but it's like, even though we know that the ones around us will support us,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of our friends are like, you know, hey man, if you need anything, reach out. I'm here.
You know
for
what's
you.
Crazy is, I mean, you know, the story, I mean, the listener doesn't know this, but you know, my wife and I lost a child, and you guys actually walked with us through a little bit of that journey. And, but I remember I was doing just that. I was pushing every bit of pain, every bit of questioning of God, everything down.
Yeah.
Because I felt like if I show strength, this will help my wife.
Right.
This will help. Because I was youth pastor at the time. This will help my youth ministry. They'll see, hey, you know, he lost a child. He's supposed to be a pastor. Why didn't God, you know, save the child? And, you know, all these things. So me trying to be strong faith guy, pushed it all down, trying to be strong. But, you know, one day I was dry mopping a gym floor and started having a conversation with God and said, hey, God, tell my baby that I love her, miss her.
Yeah.
And boom, the tears started coming. I come home.
Yeah.
I tell my wife.
Yeah.
And start crying again. And she said, thank you.
Yeah.
She goes, I was waiting for you to grieve with me.
Yeah.
Be here with me. Be present in this situation.
Yeah.
Because she's seen all this strength, but she's like, I'm not strong. Why are you strong? Like, almost like, why are you being strong?
Right.
Can't we be weak together? I mean,
right.
And that's so beautiful, you know?
Yeah.
That's how a marriage should really work.
Yes.
You know, in your weaknesses, you know, I want to be there for you, you know?
Yeah.
And I want to grieve with you. I want to cry with you. I want to minister with you, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
you know, but it was one of those things that, cause you know, cause again, we, you know, especially me, I shove things down and all of that. And it's one of those things where it's like, eventually all of that stuff that you shove down has to go somewhere.
Yep.
You know, and one thing I actually said to a therapist recently, and I've said this to my wife, so it's not like it's a secret.
Yeah.
But it's almost like I wanna learn how to explode in a healthy manner.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, yes, I can take this to God and I can worship and I can get prayer and, mm-hmm. and I can cry out, you know, but sometimes there's something about that explosion.
Yeah.
You know, where can I go that, you know, I don't necessarily want to get into a fight, but you know, what can I like beat up or hack at?
I was in a drug rehabilitation, the town I lived in, it was Huntington, West Virginia. At one point it was the heroin overdose capital of the world.
Oh, wow.
It was the number one most obese town in the world.
Wow.
And it was like number three or four for the most depressed place in the world.
Oof.
Like it was like bad.
Yeah.
I mean, we were seeing like druggies. We outside of our house, my kid almost picked up a heroin needle.
Oh.
And like it was intense.
Yeah.
And I remember I was in a drug there was the governor the governor of Ohio and a bunch of other people were in this meeting that I got to be a part of.
Oh,
and they were talking about drug rehabilitation. At that time, they had a needle exchange program, which was horrible.
Yeah.
Like they could take their used needles and they would get clean needles. But what they thought was a good thing, they were finding needles everywhere.
Yeah.
Because they'd have so many.
Yeah.
So it was doing the opposite effect.
Yes.
They just wanted them to stay clean, have clean needles inside. Yeah. I don't know. But anyways, long story short, I was in this meeting and they started talking about this program in Arizona where they put these guys that were going through drug rehabilitation through a physical fitness program.
Ooh, wow.
Intense.
Yeah.
Like CrossFit intense.
Okay.
Because they realized that the chemicals that were released from drug addicts was the same chemicals that were being released when they would do these super hard physical activities.
Yeah.
They were having like a 98%
holy
like
cow
success rate with this.
Yeah.
These guys were getting healthy. They were doing, and like, and that's just like, that's how God designed us. Like,
yeah,
we're not meant to just stay, like a body that's in motion stays in motion,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
We were meant to be active as human beings.
Yeah, we were.
So how, like you were saying, like, got a way to like release, you know, for me, it was always cycling. Like I'd go on 30, 40, 50 mile bike rides
because
I would just like, I'd be feeling like, I remember being like depressed at times and like, I just got to get out on a bike, man.
Yeah.
I got to get, you know, I was like, oh, well, aren't you a believer? Why don't you just pray it out? You know, You know, there's just moments where you just need to just go out and just hammer.
Yes.
You know, just hammer those pedals and get out there and like, just like talk to God, like release it, you know, like that's why I love, like, I would love to see you do something like fighting, like MMA.
That'd be interesting. That would definitely be interesting. See, my mind goes almost the other way. I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, maybe I should learn to be a blacksmith.
Oh, man, that'd be
that
so
would be
cool.
Fun. That would be fun.
Man, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I love trades, man.
Yeah.
I love it. And I just looked at your table up there, like.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I did get the woodworking helps. I did get into that, and that does help. But my problem with that isn't always consistent.
Yeah.
You know, and then especially it's like, you know, moments of like depression or something will hit, and it's all of a sudden I'm like, I don't want to do it. It's like I should do it because I know it'll help, but I don't want to do it because I don't feel like it. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the good, like, there was a good ish Christian book. It was okay.
Yeah.
It had moments.
Yeah.
But the one Wild at Heart, it was a pretty good men's book.
Okay.
But what it really emphasized was that men are, you know, it talked about how men were always hunter gatherers and, you know, that there's always been this wild side to a man, and a man has to be active. Like, he has to stay active. That's why a lot of these guys that were like football players in high school and all these things, and then they get into a marriage and then they're not active at all.
Yeah.
And then their mind wanders.
Yes.
And then they have affairs and they have all these things. And it's because men are like, God designed us to be active, to be doers and to do things with our hands and be active. And I think that's so healthy for a man.
Oh, I agree. I agree.
Blacksmithing, man.
Yeah, that would be fun.
You need to make that happen. That's so cool.
I've watched a couple of shows, and I'm like, I think I could do this.
That'd be so cool.
Like, yeah. I mean, I've got the beard for it, so I might as well, you know.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm not brave enough to do the beard. I can't get past the itchy stage.
Yeah. You just gotta muscle through it. Yeah. You just gotta man up.
Yeah.
I'll say it that way. I'll man up. You know, just man up and just.
What's so funny is all the guys in my band now.
Yeah.
They all have beards, man.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. I'm the only dude without a beard, you know? They're like, hold strong, man.
There you go. Yeah. I laugh because, you know, because I've got, you know, the beard and the mustache, and it's like, for the longest time, it was the mustache, especially with my wife, that, you know, she's like, no, it got to a point. It's like, she's like, no, you can't. And the running joke is, why I now am able to have a mustache is because I was away from my wife for a month and a half.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm like, that's it. I'm not shaving. And by the time I got home, my mustache was soft enough. She's like, okay, just keep it trimmed.
That's crazy.
She's like, I don't want to kiss you and get mouthful of mustache. I was like, all right, deal.
Oh, man. Joy likes me with a beard.
Yeah?
Yeah, she likes me with a beard. I just, I can't get past that itchiness, man.
Yeah. We'll talk. I'll give you some tips. I'll give you some tips to help that. Yeah. We'll get it going. Get you like a good West Virginia lumberjack beard or something.
Oh, man. Hey, did you see that guy that's he's on America's Got Talent? He's a fiddle player.
No.
And he's from West Virginia. Good Christian guy. Like,
yeah.
And he's lighting it up with the fiddle on
awesome.
America's Got Talent. I'm like, really? And he's got like the beard and he's like, he's a killer, man.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. All right. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up.
Yeah.
Is there anything practical advice for men of God that might be listening or that are listening?
I'd say here's the thing. You know, a lot of guys, you know, sometimes you feel alone. You feel like you're battling things by yourself. You know, you said it earlier in the show. It's so very important. You know, find another guy, find a friend, find somebody, let them know what you're battling. Let them know what you're going through, because, you know, the Bible says like iron sharpens iron. So is a brother to a brother.
Yeah.
So very important in this life to not fight these battles alone. You know, yes, center your life on Jesus, fall in love with Jesus. I heard a nun say here recently to Michael Koulianis. He's a pastor down in Florida.
Okay.
He met with these spirit-filled nuns.
Nice.
And he said, give me some advice. And they said, find the love of Jesus and then love him back.
Oh, man, that's good.
And he said, that's how we've remained so true and so pure. They said, just find the love of Jesus and just begin to love him back. And that sounds so simple.
Yeah.
But man, that's so profound, because if you really truly find the love of God for your life, just begin to love him back and find those brothers to do this battle with, you know. I know for sure if I'm going through something, I know for sure I can come to you. Mm. I can go to Chico.
Yeah.
You know, Chico would smack me in the back of the head.
Yeah, he would.
Get back on the horse, man. You know? And like, I have a group of guys that I just know that like I could get real with.
Yeah.
And they're not gonna think anything less of me.
Yeah.
Because we all know that, you know, we're not perfect.
Yeah.
And God's not after perfection.
No.
He's at what he is he's after us to become perfected.
Yes.
By his love.
Yeah.
By his grace. By his hand.
Yeah. He wants that loyalty and relationship.
Yeah.
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 And we as guys need to get over ourselves and actually, yes, I need to reach out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, thanks for having me, man.
No problem, man. This was fun.
I've been wanting to do this for a while. And then when it didn't happen last week, dude, I felt Like I literally wanted to crawl under the pew.
You did.
And I think I was close to fetal position. I was like, oh man, this stinks.
Yeah. But it worked out.
Yeah.
And I'll definitely have you back.
Yeah.
Because I've got a short list of guys that I want to come back and I'll tap you guys for certain topics or certain different men of the Bible and be like, you know, hey, let's talk about David or something. You know, I've talked a little bit about David, but it could get intense.
I mean, we could
have an entire series on just the different stories of David.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah.
Yeah. Why David do this?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
Guys, stay fit. Be well.